Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:35 p.m. Today is Wednesday, February 8th, 2023. Present at the committee table, we have Representative Colom, Cortez, Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Josephson, Hannon, Galvin, Stapp, myself, Co-Chair Edgman. I think we'll be expecting Representative Kronk here momentarily. The usual, we'd ask everyone to silence their cell phones if they would, please. Also like to thank our moderator, Emma Turner from the LIO, and our Finance Secretary, Bree Wiley, for being with us today. The purpose of the meeting today, just to preface things very quickly as we get started, is to hear from three different entities involving the Federal Infrastructure Act. We'll hear from the Governor's Office. We'll hear from Alaska Federation of Natives. We'll hear from the Alaska Municipal League. The slide decks, there's three of them, total 40 different slides. So we're going to be a little bit challenged for time. So I'm going to ask if members would indulge the chair's request to hold questions till the end of each slide deck presentation. And at that point, we'll also monitor time for questions. Just to finish prefacing things, the state of Alaska, obviously, I think we know the role as a separate branch of government, ourselves, the legislature, our joint role working on the budget and appropriation process. But both Alaska Municipal League and Alaska Native Federation of Natives will give their presentations as navigators, connectors between communities, tribes, regional corporations, not-for-profits, maybe other third-party entities, working with the state of Alaska for opportunities vis-a-vis the very, very large and ever-growing, it seems, Federal Infrastructure Act as we learn more about it as time goes forward. So with that, not seeing any questions or comments from the committee itself, we're just going to dive in, do each individual slide deck presentation, pause for questions, take a look at the time, and then go forward. So with that, Mr. Anderson, do you want to kick things off, please?
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you all. Good afternoon. My name is Mike Anderson. I'm the acting infrastructure coordinator in the Office of the Governor, Office of Infrastructure. A bit of a mouthful. I will be honest. I've been in the job for the past 4 weeks. Replaced Miles Baker, who kind of really stood up this initiative. Miles is known to many down here in Juneau, and wish him well in his next endeavors. So really here to talk about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which was a massive piece of legislation, historic in a lot of ways. It passed in November of 2021, and it's got a bunch of different names, IIJA, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, you know, but in many circles, it's really just a big deal. I've viewed this as a, I've heard some people say once in a century, once in a generation type of piece of legislation. And that I think is really going to help Alaska build, update, and modernize our roads, our ports, our bridges, our ferries, will improve or give communities broadband, deal with our troubling rural sanitation issues. And it's going to truly transform the state's energy infrastructure and economy for decades to come. To take one step back, really before I dive into more of the details, I do want to thank both these individuals sitting to my left and my right. They are a wealth of knowledge, and you'll hear after my presentation, they'll do a lot of cleanup and provide a lot more detail on this stuff, but I want to thank them for being here because they didn't have to be, so I appreciate that. But just a little bit in terms of how the sausage was made in terms of this bill, if you kind of recall, this is now almost a year and a half ago. This was an effort by a coalition of senators in the from the left and from the right. Some wanted it to be, you know, $1 trillion of absolute new spending. The others thought, well, maybe we use some leftover COVID money that was unspent. And we start with that, and then we'll see what amount of new money is we need. So if you see here, this first bullet here, the IIJ is really, it's a 5-year reauthorization of a bunch of established federal programs, primarily in the US DOT and EPA related latest stuff. And as you'll see, it's the new money is $550 billion above the new line, which amounts to 46% of the bill. And that that's going to be where your broadband, your energy and power, your electric vehicle, your cybersecurity, your resiliency type measures are. And the majority of these funds will come through existing programs, as I mentioned before. So think DOT, surface transportation, FAA, airport improvement program, rural water, drinking and clean fund, resolving funds. And the other thing to keep in mind is mostly it's formula driven. So it's things that have been around for a long time, taken various aspects into play. The other thing I want to do, and it's great to catch you all early in the session, is to dispel any myths you might or might not have, in that unlike, say, the CARES Act or ARPA, these funds are not they're not going to the Office of Infrastructure and we're playing a little closer, sure. Rookie move. They're formula driven, and they're not. It's not like it goes to state. We delve it out and go from there. It's a much more traditional process. So we're not expected to receive any sort of tranches or unrestricted direct aid that's being transferred directly to the state, and really only a small portion would be that. So this just kind of conceptualizes, I think, in greater detail, kind of how it goes. So you see the dark blue is the traditional formula funding that flows to the state every year, every couple of years, depending on how the authorization bills are structured. And the light blue is the new spending. So you see it's a pretty massive amount of money. And when you parse it out, of that $550 billion in new money, 284 of it is in transportation alone. And so again, that's roads, bridges, airports, ports, waterways, etc. And the other half, the $266 billion, is energy, power grid, broadband, water, again, resiliency, which you'll hear a lot, and environmental remediation. So go to the next slide. And this is just another kind of good, I thought, breakdown visualization. You can see how it's broken down. And I should have, caveated this at the beginning. All these numbers are national level stuff. And we'll get to when we get a little further along in this presentation, you'll see the role that the Office of Infrastructure is playing, which is to really try and parse out and track everything that's coming into the state or opportunities might have to invest to apply to the best of our ability. But it just shows you the sheer mass and the sheer diversity of different things that this bill provides throughout the entire U.S. economy. So just breaking this down in a little bit better detail. Again, you got roads and bridges, $110 billion nationally over 5 years, which is a big deal. Alaska is looking to see about a 20% increase over the course of 5 years. Rail, you talked to the Alaska Railroad, not a ton coming to our Alaska Railroad. Unfortunately, this rail funding was a lot of the Northeast Corridor, big kind of Amtrak. If you've ever taken the train from New York to DC, it's a bit of a cluster. So money to improve those efforts. Transit, we'll talk a little bit more. I have a whole slide on ferries, but to Senator Murkowski's credit, there's a pretty sizable provision in there that the state of Alaska was able to capitalize on. Representative Ortiz, that will make a huge amount of difference. You got your airports, your ports, your safety kind of safe streets initiatives that deal with trying to bring down our roadway deaths and accidents, which are still too high. EV infrastructure, which I think is still kind of cutting edge, and we're on the precipice of that. I know AEA is doing great things on that. And then you have the electric buses, And just to finish up, broadband. I don't have a slide in on broadband, but I'll just touch on that briefly as it relates to Alaska. The state under the Department of Commerce has actually stood up an entire office of broadband. And I was speaking with Chair Edgman today and would recommend that they get before you sooner rather than later, because they're doing a lot of great work, and there's quite a bit of money coming into the state in several different aspects as it relates to broadband. So that's just something to keep in mind. So that brings me to really what our Office of Infrastructure does. And as I kind of mentioned before, part of the reason for wanting to give this presentation was to kind of dispel any myths you may or may not have in terms of what our office does. And we're really, it's about identifying and tracking opportunities. We're in phase one of a massive, what we're calling an opportunity tracker, that is just a massive, massive Excel spreadsheet for now, that it has hundreds of different opportunities throughout this build that we're tracking. We're capturing that stuff. We're then coordinating with all our agencies who might be tracking some of the stuff, or might be not. It might not be top of mind to them, so keeping them abreast of the situation. Supporting tribes, local government, and agencies. As you're seeing the individuals here with me, that collaboration has been great. Really trying to fine tune the data collection. Phase two of our project is going to be putting the tracker online and actually having an interface so that the public can come and play around and see and have a map that will have geolocated where the monies have gone to the best of our ability. And there's going to be instances where, it's hard to track a massive DOT project, but when the very specific level stuff should be able to hover over and be able to see. So that's coming. In terms of how the office is structured within the governor's office, last year the legislature funded the office with $1 million in UGF funding. The governor in his FY24 proposed budget proposed another $1 million for this next coming fiscal year. It would pay for two positions. The role that I am keeping the seat warm for until we hire a more permanent person. I would envision a deputy as well. And then with kind of how our office is structured, able to move some stuff around, there'd be two other additional people within the office. One that would be more of a data analyst to really dig into the numbers and track this stuff, because it gets really technical and really deep really quickly. And so having an analyst would be great. And then an admin support as well. So having a four-person office would track with what a lot of other states are doing. It's a worthwhile investment to be able to help kind of quarterback and be an air traffic controller of sorts for this, as I mentioned before, once in a generation fund. So
can we hold the questions until after the presentation, please?
So as I kind of mentioned earlier, we're on it. We're tracking to the best of our ability, figuring out where we might need matching funds, where we can collaborate with other key stakeholders, where we can get the attention of departments that may not have seen the latest NOFO or some sort of small agency, sub-agency of an agency put out a big notice. And so the two numbers we have, and if you all, I know one of the questions I had thought of was, well, what if they ask about, a potential investment in my district? And as we're kind of building that out, I think that's something that we could provide for you on a case-by-case basis if you need be, in terms of really narrowing it down. But in terms of the stuff that we've been able to, the funds that we've been able to track using our opportunity tracker, we can safely say that there has been $3.5 billion awarded just to the state Alaska departments. Now, keep in mind that's a lot of that's DOT forming the funding, but that's the number we feel confident saying. $4.7 billion that we've tracked is going to be committed over the 5-year window of this legislation. And when then you parse it out even further to include, you know, funds that are not just to the state agencies, it jumps to $5.5 billion over the first 2 years, and then $6.7 billion committed to date of the 5-year period. And Chair and I were talking before this hearing, and that's what we know. It's going to be in the 5-year window, and it could expand beyond that. So we're still amassing and tracking our stuff. So those numbers before you are going to continue to grow over the course of this next few years. Wanted to put in a slide in on the Alaska Marine Highway System. Obviously, positive news coming out in January from the FTA. It was 6 different grants. And these were the total awards numbers. Adds up to roughly $285 million. And I can say on the record that the state definitely intends to work with the legislature to match this funding, some of which has already been appropriated and some of which they're working on the back end to make it work. So it's as they kind of sift through these awards, you'll be having more updates, but I can commit that the matches will happen. In terms of the competitive award opportunities, as I said before, a lot of this money that was coming in was formula driven, but there are significant opportunities in the competitive space where, you know, the state or AFN or whomever is up against everyone else across the country. And so these are just kind of 4 that I wanted to highlight today to put on your guys' radar as you're going through your business here, you know, shaping the budget. You have the electric grid modernization, clean hydrogen, carbon capture and sequestration, and rare earth and critical minerals. This is my last slide, and I'll just kind of end by saying that Alaska in many ways was fortunate in this piece of legislation because the way it was written and the themes that were carried on throughout the bill are opportunities that Alaska has. So that relates to tribal and Alaska Native eligibility. You know, we have more than our fair share of historically underserved and hard to reach communities. You know, our multimodal transportation dependency on airlines and ferries, how our climate is being impacted, our extremely high energy costs, our disadvantaged communities, and our minority and low-income populations. So those are all aspects kind of written on the margins of the bill that when you square it with Alaska and our needs, they're quite pressing. And, you know, I'll leave you with the challenges. Obviously, the statewide planning and coordination and communication is always a challenge. It will continue to be one. That's why the office is here. That's why as much collaboration and working together as possible is going to be imperative. Always looking for great technical capacity and workforce availability. As I said, there's, you know, 3 spots within our own Office of Infrastructure that we're working to fill. And then the matching funds across, you know, all eligible receipts will be a discussion that's, I'm sure, ongoing. So with that, I guess I'll take some questions.
Yes. Before we turn to questions, and I've got the co-chair, Representative Hannon, Representative Ortiz in the queue, just a sort of a point of executive privilege. I wanted to acknowledge the heavy lift that this bill involved back east. It was a bill that teetered and tottered and eventually came together with, as you pointed out, incredible bipartisan cooperation. And our congressional delegation, I think, deserve more than just a nod of acknowledgement and respect and gratitude, but the fact that Senator Murkowski was at the ground level with the group of 5 Republican senators, 5 Democratic senators, sort of building this bill into what actually passed into law. We had Senator Sullivan here just a couple of days ago addressing the legislature, reminding us that there's billions of dollars of benefits, as you pointed out, benefits that we don't quite yet know about through this act, and we're learning, as we'll hear from our navigators. But also, a great nod of gratitude to late Congressman Don Young. Without his efforts, this bill might not have gotten to the House, and we might not be here talking about the great benefits coming our way in Alaska. So I just wanted to put that on the record, and keeping an eye on the clock, we'll turn things over to questions. Co-Chair Johnson, you want to lead things up?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I have so many questions and thoughts, and I'll try to distill them down into something that kind of that you can answer. I know that you're trying. I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to give us a good sense of what's happening right now, a snapshot of time of how much is available and how much it looks like Alaska is going to get. It's hard to figure out exactly how much that's going to be. And I guess that was going to be my question, but I recognize that I think that's what your whole presentation was, and I appreciate that. So one of the concerns that I've heard and I do have is that we're looking at a five-year window, and there was some, you mentioned just that it might be more than 5 years, but one of the challenges a lot of times Alaska is countercyclical with the rest of the country where our oil prices go up, and, you know, it might be great in Alaska, but less happening in the lower 48. So we have this kind of shift of workforce between the lower 48 and Alaska as far as being able to find labor. And it seems, you know, with all of this money hitting the United States all at one time, we're probably going to be competing for workforce more than, you know, we might have for other big projects. Is there any idea that this might be able to be extended more than 5 years, or especially if there was a plan in place in larger construction projects? Or that was kind of my first question, is how do we spend the funds if we don't have the labor and the workforce to do so?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Johnson, that's a great question. I think the short answer is it depends. I think in some instances the shelf life to spend is within the parameters of what the NOFO went out. In others, it can be extended. I think if there was a case-by-case instance that you wanted to follow up with us on, and we can track down to the best of our ability, but I think to speak about it in a broad sense like that, I honestly don't know, and we can certainly follow up. But I hear you. You know, when you talk about workforce and we're competing against the same stuff, and that's part of the reason that the Office of Infrastructure exists is to, okay, well, let's all collaborate together. Let's be as efficient as we can. Let's understand that if there's three communities that might be going after the same project, maybe one does, and we collaborate all the resources together in that instance. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Well,
yes.
Thank you for taking a run at it. I just foresee that we're going to probably need on a case by case basis to potentially extend if at all possible. So.
Well, Chair Johnson, can I just intervene quickly? I think Mr. Anderson wanted to add.
Okay. Maybe I'll just add to Mr. Anderson's comments. For the record, Nils Andreasen, Executive Director of Alaska Municipal League. Chair Johnson, I think what you'll find is that while the bill is focused on these 5 years and there will be funding opportunities within each of those 5 years, really we're looking at probably a 10-year time horizon for when those projects will actually be deployed and have to be implemented by. So you can think about funding available for 5 years, project deployment at least through 10 years.
Thank you. Follow up, yes. And then I guess... how much is still out there to be applied for? Is most of the, are the grants pretty well closed? And, I mean, there's still things that are coming on to the radar, my understanding, and how much do you anticipate that we don't even quite know about yet?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Johnson, it's quite a lot is still outstanding. The agencies are still in the infancy stages of getting out there. Their notice of funding opportunities. It's kind of been almost like a rolling admissions. There's been depending upon the department or agency, some take longer, some take have a shorter timeline. Some of the bigger energy projects, they have you submit a kind of a concept report before they even then decide, well, then, you know what, you know, apply to the second phase of this, and then we'll vet it and get it back to you. So it's there is quite a lot of funding still to be seen. I don't know if you want to weigh in as well.
Yeah. I mean, just 2 hours ago, the second round of Port Improvement Development Program funds, the NOFO, was released for $662 million available. So it is on a rolling basis. There are still some programs that were identified in the first round of funding that haven't been released yet. Protect through USDOT, I think, is still out there. A lot of the Department of Energy programs are still available. The concept papers have been sent in, but nothing come back. So I think we still have, even from the first year, a lot of awards still to see come out, and then a second year of funding announced and responded to.
And for the record, that was Mr. Andreessen. Did I get that right? Also, for the record, I'd like to acknowledge that Representative Kroc joined us at 1:45 p.m. a little bit ago. Further follow-ups? Co-chair?
Thank you. I don't want to wrap in like six questions in one question, but I guess it is just my final statement, and I'll let other people have a chance. But it's exciting to know that there's still more to look at, and to encourage people and encourage departments to continue to look for the opportunities, because they're not all quite done yet. And then, I mean, including, you know, there's quite a variety. Anyway, thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Edgman. My question for Mr. Andreessen, I want to go back to the Office of Infrastructure within the Governor's Office, which we funded last year at $1 million, and you said there's an additional $1 million operational request for that. So anticipating a $2 million four-staff office in the Governor's Office to assist in the 30% grant programs, and I'm wondering whether we should anticipate additional costs in the departments that serve those grants. So at DCCED or community and regional affairs, working with the local governments who are going to need to do those grant applications. That's my first question.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I do know that actually, and I didn't include this in the slide deck, but there are several agencies that have asked for additional funds in the governor's budget in the Department of Commerce for that very reason, to be kind of the implementation and grant side of thing employees that work on that. So there's been a recognition amongst the departments that is an area where they might be woefully understaffed at the moment, given the volume of stuff that will be coming in the future.
So Mr. Andreessen, I guess I want to just express early on, I have concern about us spending that much money to have someone oversee someone who's actually doing the work versus the people who are doing the grant applications. Goodness knows, it's a complicated thing. I have no idea what a notice of funding opportunities looks like, but imagine that it takes some translation. And I know that with the previous tranches of money during COVID, that the last municipal league had to spend a lot of time translating for especially the smaller communities who probably need the bigger infrastructure investments than the larger municipalities in Alaska. But it's a lot of money at the administrative top instead of getting those grants out. And that's what I want to make sure we focus on, is getting that money out to the communities on the competitive grants, because as you articulated, the bulk of this bill is already in a formulaic fashion. I'm not fearful that DOT struggles to figure out how to apply for DOT programs that they've done for years and years and years. But I am concerned of communities that have not been successful in getting water and sewer, have all the support they need to get that out the door, applied for successfully. So can you enlighten me or assuage me that my concern is misplaced, or that we're putting the money into the real infrastructure into our smallest communities?
Yeah. Maybe, Chair, if I respond.
Grayson.
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon. I will. This is a collaborative effort, so I will demonstrate that collaboration. The legislature also funded last year the Alaska Federation of Natives and AML to provide some of that support to communities, and I would anticipate that collaboration and need continuing into this in these upcoming years. I will also say, and maybe just to be really clear about the role of the Office of Infrastructure in the Governor's Office, it's not to do the work that agencies are doing. It's not to necessarily be writing grants that agencies will be building up the capacity to also write grants for. And I will say that they don't currently have that capacity. So there's just as much kind of capacity building at the agency level as there is statewide. The real value of having this office in the governor's office is that broader external collaboration and making sure that there aren't missed opportunities. So I see them really augmenting the capacity of each of the agencies, strengthening the collaborations between current partners, and also bringing in additional types of planning efforts at the regional level between the private sector, nonprofits, tribes, and local governments. And I think it's that where the real value lies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the Chair, going to page 2, looking at the third bullet down, many programs require 20% federal match. And you spoke a little bit about match in your opening comments there. That, you know, if the state were to were able to receive the amount of monies that we think we might be able to receive, the 20% match itself will have a significant impact on UGF or whatever source we're coming up with in terms of for those match funds. Would you say that the administration is committed to partnering with the legislature to make sure that we pursue every dollar that's possible for the state to receive and be willing to stand up our efforts for the match to make sure that the match is there?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, I am here representing the Office of Infrastructure, so I will take that question under advisement and get back to you. I don't want to speak out of turn. I do have a slide here I did not include in the slide deck that in the governor's FY24 proposed budget. There's $156 million in UGF put forward in his budget to help capitalize and maximize on $1.5 billion in federal monies. So I would point you to that as a starting point. I will work to get back to you with a more definitive answer.
And Representative Ortiz, I think that's a great question, and I think it's a question that both the representatives from AFN and AML could probably help respond to. Mm-hmm. But the floor is yours. Do you have a follow-up?
If I might, kind of a same kind of general topic, but not necessarily dealing with match. If you could go to page 6, and under the category of broadband, there is, and I realize these are overall across the country we're talking about that's going to be available, but there's, what is it, $20 billion that we're talking about that's going to go towards trying to promote affordability and equity. Do we have any idea how that looks? Because I know that in previous efforts here at the state level, when we've tried to expand broadband availability through other previous opportunities, one of the issues was, it seemed to me, particularly in the rural areas, the money was put forward, but a lot of that money was, for lack of a better term, used up by the providers, and so the broadband might be getting to those areas, but then the rates that were being offered were pretty exorbitant in these situations that I'm aware of. And so, in a sense, while it was available, it wasn't affordable. Can you tell me any idea how this amount of money that's going to go towards affordability and equity will actually work?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I was handed something right before I sat down here, and I imagine Nicole might be able to expound upon this as well. But so within of this pot of money in the broadband category, the entity doing the majority of the distribution is the NTIA, the National Telecom and Information Administration. And so they have broken it down into four kind of initiatives or programs, if you will. There is the digital equity program, which will be a rather massive program. The state of Alaska Office of Broadband received $567,800 to come up with a digital equity planning kind of program. And the Rasmussen Foundation is administering the planning effort in that regards. And so the capacity and competitive grants that will be doled out coming out from that will be from that one. There is what's known as the BEAD program, Broadband Equity Access and Deployment. The state of Alaska will be receiving at minimum $100 million. And there was a $5 million in seed money that the Office of Broadband received for their planning efforts. And the amount of awards, which will be which this BEAD program has $42 billion to dole out, will be announced later this year, I believe. And so that's I know something that the office is working hard on. And there's two other programs that the state is not as intimately involved with, and maybe Nicole can speak to, and that's the middle mile and then the tribal broadband connectivity. And you've actually seen just in the last several year or two, quite a bit of money. And I have some figures here, but I'll let Nicole speak. But it's pretty sizable amounts of money to various regions across the state.
Thanks, Mike. Through the chair, Nicole Borromeo, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for AFN, also the Program Director for the Navigator Program. To your question, Representative Ortiz, the short answer is it's a lot. We're talking billions of dollars. There's going to be two separate sources of the way that this money will come to Alaska, one of which will be through a formula grant. Every state has been mapped at this point. Alaska's maps are deficient. We are trying to change them in a lot of areas because we don't believe that this is not just AFN who believes this, the state believes this, a lot of the telecom providers believe that the way that the feds have mapped the underserved and unserved communities is very deficient in almost all regions of the state. The second revenue stream that will come is through competitive grants. And maybe to Representative Hannah's question, this is why we do need Office of Infrastructure, so they can help get us in the room and compete and know when those grants are coming as well. There's a lot of ground to cover. Many hands make light work. When I get to my slides, you'll see just the amount of tribal set-asides that AFN is tracking. So the more eyes and ears that we can have in far corners of Washington, D.C., and everywhere in between, is how we're going to be able to capitalize on these funds.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I have next in the queue, I've got Representative Galvin and Josephson and Klom and Obshesky, and we'll do our best to kind of get through the questions without shortchanging anybody opportunity, because we do have two more presentations and hopefully some opportunity for Q&A to kind of round things out. But Representative Galvin?
Thank you, through the chair, and I think in the interest of time, I'll try to just ask this one question, but I have a couple of others that I'll try to maybe simplify. What I heard from Senator Sullivan about the particularly broadband was that it was specifically written to make sure that underserved areas would be the focus of, or certainly given higher priority. And I'm seeing other areas here as a new state. I wondered if that has, if it was also written to perhaps help underserved areas with regard to water and sewer, for example. I think about the needs of the state and how new we are with regard to infrastructure, and this naturally would seem like an incredible opportunity for us if it was written that way, and I'm not familiar enough to know and hope to find out more from you all. Thank you.
For the record, Nils Andreas, AML, through the chair, Representative Galvin. I think this is one of Alaska's competitive advantages when it comes to the bipartisan infrastructure law, that we are lots of us are underserved in terms of communities. Underserved is applicable to each of those buckets that you saw in a lot of ways. And there's an executive order, kind of shorthand call it Justice 40 initiative from the administration that talks about disadvantaged communities. That includes rural, tribal, and lots of different metrics that each agency applies to determine who's underserved, unserved, disadvantaged, et cetera. And there's additional scoring and a merit that comes with those determinations.
Thank you very much. Quick follow-up through the chair. I assume also that there may be some extra points, if you will, given to ready communities with shovel-ready projects as well.
Yes. Mm.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, for Mr. Anderson, at page 2, following up on Representative Ortiz's question about the 20% non-federal match. So I think you mentioned $156 million in the capital budget, and then with the federal portion, it was something like 10 times that much. Here we're talking about the need to double that. Although we could have partners doing it, that's how I read that. Should the Ways and Means Committee, for example, which I don't sit on but am monitoring, should it just factor in and just book in that sort of figure, so that maybe in the out years it would be 250 to 300 million in capital spending? I mean, because they're going to be presumably presenting an overall fiscal strategy. Would they be wise to do that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I will flag for you that, and I was general in this 20% federal match. In certain instances, it is in fact smaller. In certain facts, I think it could be more in magnitude of 5 or 10%. I think, again, I don't want to get out in front of Neil at OMB or anyone else in my role here as the infrastructure coordinators are, if you will. I've been tasked primarily as to be a collaborator and a bringing people together and tracking this stuff, and so I will defer to them in terms of telling Ways and Means Committee what to do. But your point is taken.
Follow up, Representative Josephson.
If there are partners, tribal, for example, in state or local governments, is there a system for reaching the match, or is it just an ad hoc negotiation? Perhaps Mr. Andreessen has, or Ms. Borromeo has a sense of that.
Through the chair, Nicole Borromeo, AFN. Representative Josephson, I'm not with the Office of the Governor's Infrastructure Investment, so I can go ahead and answer the question. I believe that it would be a wise fiscal policy for the state legislature to set aside funds to match all of these grant programs. It's like priming a well. You have to dump water down the well to turn on the tap. And if we dump a little bit of a federal match into these programs, the benefit to Alaskans region-wide will be felt 80-fold. So why wouldn't you, as members, look to prime the well? That's how I would look at the match. And the other question, about is it an ad hoc negotiation or are these funds set aside? It is very much an ad hoc negotiation. We're seeing that right now in a lot of different energy grants. Thank you.
Mr. Andreessen.
If I might add, Mr. Nils Andreessen, for the record, I think there's not the capacity at the local, tribal, and any other level to do all of this when it comes to non-federal match. I mean, just for transportation, I've seen requests for $1.2 billion in projects just from local governments. We can think about probably at least $2 billion in projects coming from local and tribal and others in response to these projects, and finding 20% match will be, yes, a collaborative effort, but it won't rest on local and tribal governments to take on all of that. So a partner at the state level is really critical.
Okay. Follow up.
That was two very helpful answers. My last question, through the chair, for Mr. Andreessen, just some clarification at page 5. It says that Alaska will receive about 20% of a 31% increase the first year. So does the 31% increase represent a federal nationwide increase and we get one-fifth of that? Is that how I read that?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Colon.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I had a question about the infrastructure office. So this is a lot of money in a fairly short amount of time. Is it going to be the role of the office to account for those funds being spent? So if someone has a grant, where's the accountability to make sure that those funds were spent the way they were supposed to be spent? Is that going to be on that office, or is that the federal government, or is that local communities that would track those projects and make sure that they were following what they're spending it on, what they're supposed to be spending it on?
And through the chair, you're talking about the $1 million appropriated to the Office of Infrastructure?
No, I'm talking about when grants are applied for, and you have a role, or the office has a role in making sure everybody knows, you know, how to do that and what, you know, what monies to go for. I'm trying to find out who are they accountable to make sure that money was spent on the way it was supposed to be spent.
I think through the chair, Representative Coulomb, Mr. Nils Andreessen, for the record, I think the answer is that it wouldn't be up to the Office of Infrastructure to be accountable for those, that the applicant would have its direct responsibilities to the granting agency, and then it would be the granting agency at the federal level, or if it came through the state, at the state agency level, who's responsible for compliance.
Okay, thank you.
I was just talking to the co-chair here, having a quick sidebar. You know, given the role of the Department of Transportation, primarily here in Alaska, and the Marine Highway System and other sort of beneficiaries, it probably would be warranted to have another hearing, and maybe to get more in the specifics. And in fairness to Mr. Andreessen, who's been on the job for maybe less than a month, we're putting him on the hot seat. But good questions, and questions that we can bring up likely at another hearing. So with that, last on the list, but certainly not least, Representative Tom Shesky.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. Through the chair, page 3, environmental remediation. Last year, a congressional delegation announced a $32 million grant for cleaning up legacy wells, federal land remediation. Can you discuss, is that funding part of this package, or is any way going to be able to be used as part of this package? And are we going to be, are we going to have to come up with that 20% also for the legacy well cleanup on federal land?
Through the chair, it is my understanding that those types of initiatives are covered and will be distributed through the EPA and other agencies to address that. But I would defer to Nils if he had anything else to add.
Yeah, I think so. Nils Andreessen, for the record, through the chair, Representative Topsetsky. I'll learn it. Don't worry. So yes, it's those programs are covered under IJA. It really depends the match requirement. I haven't seen match as much a requirement under EPA funded programs as under DO, Department of Energy, much more likely and higher. Department of Transportation, very likely at 20%, but EPA has been really variable. And And then I think those would apply to DNR, would be the state agency that's probably responding to those either formula or competitive opportunities.
Follow-up? Thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. So moving on to presentation number two, I guess we have AFN up next. Mr. Romeo, welcome.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of House Finance. Again, Nicole Baromeo, I'm AFN's Executive Vice President and General Counsel, and I also serve as the Director of our Navigator Program. From AFN's point of view, the recent federal investment in states, tribes, tribal organizations, and our Alaska Native corporations under the six major economic relief bills, one of which is IJA, is nothing short of transformative. But unfortunately, the Native community has not been able to compete for these opportunities for a number of reasons, central of which is broadband. Another reason that competitive applications have been hard for tribes, tribal organizations, and Native corporations to manage is that they have very limited personnel and general funds. This is where the Navigator program comes in. The Navigator program was started in 2021 with a simple goal in mind. We want to capitalize on this once-in-a-generation federal investment for post-pandemic economic recovery, and we're doing so through a public-private partnership. The Navigator program is currently in what we're calling internally Phase 3. Phase 1 was June to December 2021, and it was launched under a CARES grant from the state of Alaska. During that short 6 months, we designed and deployed the program, and we also focused on our number one goal at the time, which was primarily education and outreach. There are so many opportunities, you'll see in a further slide what I'm talking about, that a lot of the information wasn't getting down to tribes, tribal organizations, and ANCs in a way that was quickly and easily digestible, so that's what the Navigator program helped do. The Navigator program was very successful, so when the Alaska Native community received finally its share of the CARES money that we had to fight all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court for and were successful in the Chehalis litigation, Chugach Alaska Corporation knew that because the funding had lapsed with the state that we needed to have follow-on funding, much like Representative Ortiz asked about keeping that well primed so that we could continue to be competitive. So phase two of our program ran from November 2021 to September 2022. During that time, we continued to provide education and outreach on all the different tribal set-asides, but we also evolved our program consciously, and we focused on putting together consortium applications because we realized that tribal administrators and employees and even Native executives were just too taxed to keep up with all of the outreach, all of the notice of funding opportunities, and the awards coming were quite competitive. Since July of last year, that's supposed to say phase three, I apologize, that three got dropped off, we have evolved once again. We are now continuing to operate the program under a grant from the Alaska State Legislature. Thank you very much. And in addition to continuing to provide those two baseline services of education and outreach along with our consortium applications, we've added a third component, which is compliance and reporting. And the reason compliance and reporting has come to a forefront is because a lot of these federal grants, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, and this was what Representative Colom asked about, you will undergo a red flag during the federal audit process. And if tribes and tribal organizations, ANCs, or any other organization in Alaska is flagged, they will now face jeopardizing all of their federal programs. Next slide. In the simplest sense, the Navigator program operates under a hub and spoke model. AFN is the hub. Our consultants and collaborators that we work with are our spokes. But very, very briefly, we have three main levels of navigators in the program. The first is a federal navigator. This individual is responsible for tracking legislation in its draft and final form, as well as corresponding grant programs that come out of those different pieces of legislation. Again, AFN was tracking all six major pieces of economic relief passed by Congress, including IJA, but mainly focusing on CARES, ARPA, the Consolidated Appropriation Act of 2021, and then also making sure that we knew where the federal set-asides for tribes were in the regular appropriation bills and any other special piece of legislation that came out as well. After those pieces of legislation and grant programs are distilled and briefed and ready to be transmitted to the Native community, we bring in our next tier of navigators. These are our regional navigators. We've assigned all of the 12 ANCSA regions, the Geographical Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act regions, a navigator. And this individual is responsible for building and maintaining relationships with hundreds, literally of hundreds, of tribes, Native corporations, tribal organizations, and other influential individuals and organizations within their regions. They do this through regular office hours, through one-on-one consultations with them, and the goal here is to make sure that the navigators know what every community in their region needs, whether their priority is water and sewer, broadband, transportation, energy, and we keep all of that information in various databases. Our third navigator in the program is the program director, and that's me. I oversee all of the administration of the program itself and focus very keenly on federal policies and advocating for changes in those policies when they don't benefit Alaska. Two examples that I'd like to leave you with are a change that AFN was instrumental in bringing to ARPA. ARPA had a $20 billion tribal set-aside. Of that $20 billion, Congress directed the Department of Treasury to allocate $1 billion of it based on a pro rata share to all 574 tribal governments. The other $19 billion, Treasury had discretion over. So they held tribal consultations, which AFN participated in. They asked for written comments on how we thought that fund should be distributed. And in the end, they did what federal agencies likely do with tribal set-asides, is they dispersed it based on population and economic loss. If you aren't familiar with Alaska tribes, our tribes are small. We will never be able to compete with the Navajo, Cherokee, Choctaw in terms of tribal citizens. And because of the time and manner in which we settled our land claims with the federal government, most of our tribal employees are not actually employed by the tribe, but they're employed by their regional nonprofit. So on paper, with the IRS 990 forms, our tribes weren't showing any economic losses. Rather, the economic loss was borne by the regional nonprofit. So when they published the funding formula, we asked them to grant us a follow-up meeting, which they were very kind in doing, and we explained to them very gently that they got it wrong in Alaska, and as a result, our tribes were going to be shut out of $19 billion effectively, and we have 229 tribes in Alaska. Treasury officials were polite in saying, you know, thank you for your concern. The funding formula has been published, though, and it's done. AFN's president, Julie Kitka, responded by saying, thank you very much, but we're going to spend the weekend working on a white paper, and by we, I mean Nicole, working on the white paper, and we are going to try and convince you otherwise. So we spent the weekend, sent in the paper. This was at the end of May. By 4th of July, we still hadn't heard from the Department of Treasury, so I emailed the random email, not knowing if anybody's even checking it, and lo and behold, a Treasury official called me at my desk and said, oh, I'm responding to your email. I see that you didn't see the announcement in the Federal Register. And I said, well, of course I didn't see the announcement in the Federal Register, just like you to publish it on a holiday weekend when nobody's even looking at the Federal Register. And the federal Treasury official says, well, you should check this because you're going to want to see what it says. And I said, don't you worry. I'm checking it right now as I, you know, log into the website. And lo and behold, they clawed back a good portion of those funds for Alaska, republished their funding formula, which they have never done, and as a result gave a mandatory $1 million to every single tribe in the country. And even though it benefited tribes countrywide, Alaska and their Northern California Rancheria were the big winners of that. I've since learned that without AFN's involvement in advocating for those funds and that funding change, that $200 million would have saved the state of Alaska, because only about 10 of our tribes showed an economic loss and had a population large enough to qualify for that money. The Navigator program provides a plethora of different technical assistance to our tribes, tribal organizations, and Alaska Native corporations. We don't discriminate within the Native community about the eligible entity, as long as those funds are to benefit the Alaska Native community and by extension all of Alaska. We are tracking, we are analyzing, and we are pounding, some would say, to make sure that applications are in. We have a funding database of the different grant opportunities. We provide one-page funding summaries because it's difficult even for me as a lawyer to get through a 75-page NOFO. We provide workshops and trainings, a lot of times in partnership with the federal government. We provide weekly newsletters that is not a kitchen sink announcement of everything that's happening in the federal and state government, but only the most important opportunities that we don't want to see slip through the cracks. We are now helping with reporting and compliance because, as I mentioned before, it's not good enough if our tribes, tribal organizations know about the opportunity and they've secured it. If they aren't closing it up with a A-plus grant report at the end and making sure that all the grant reports are in, then everything is on the line and in jeopardy. And then in certain limited instances, AFN has put together an application on behalf of the Native community, and that's been through our consortia applications. Next slide, please. This is a slide that I was alluding to before when several of you asked, well, what are the opportunities out there? What all are you tracking? This is just the programs that we're tracking for the tribal set-asides in these six economic relief bills. Some of them are in IJA, others are in CARES and ARPA, but we look at the opportunity holistically, not just by the different pieces of legislation, but the whole entire package. And as you can see here, there's roughly $35 billion just in tribal set-aside that we can use to supplement the state's investment in rural Alaska, but we don't want our efforts to supplant any investment that this committee or the other body would make in rural Alaska. Next slide, please. I want to leave you with a few concrete examples of our work, and this is just one of them. AFN was successful in securing a $35.1 million broadband award from the National Telecommunication Information Administration. This application was submitted on behalf of 74 Alaska Native tribes and village corporations. When that first tranche of broadband money came out, and I know the committee's had a lot of questions on broadband, there are about five big programs, but the first big one that hit the funding street, if you will, was the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program. That program provided two separate sources of grants. One was for infrastructure, and many Native communities were applying for that because that's what's needed, infrastructure. But there was another revenue stream, and that was for use and adoption. That's taking existing service and figuring out how it can be modified to provide better service, and also providing some subsidies, improving telehealth. And what we realized when we were talking to the Alaska Native community is that that second stream of revenue for the use and adoption was not going to be accessed at all. So AFN put together an application and invited 74 members of the Native community, again, tribes and village corporations, to join in our application, and was successful in being awarded the grant. We've been told by NTAI that it was the gold standard and benchmark by which they judged every single other application in Indian country for use and adoption against, and it is the largest award in Indian country. With that award, we are going to focus on seven primary areas, including telehealth, subsidies, a train-the-trainer program, a roving IT program, and hopefully then be able to turn this work over to a lot of the other Native corporations and tribes who are coming in the separate wave with BEAD and Middle Mile and getting their community surveyed for those different programs. Next, please. In addition to the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program. AFN has put together three other consortium applications on behalf of the Alaska Native community. And this slide represents the number of consortium members that we are representing through our applications and the cold, hard dollars that have been secured. So Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program, again, we were awarded $35.1 million. That award is in implementation phases right now. Next is the Digital Equity Planning Grant Program. This is another broadband program. There's an asterisk by it because we don't know for sure that there's 4.4 million. That may be a little low or it may be a little high. It just depends on all of the other tribes in the country who have applied. But we do know with 147 members, NTAI has told us that we are the largest consortium again. And whatever that number is, that's a $15 million tribal set aside, and we will capture at least a third of it due to the size of our consortium. The Capital Projects Fund is another consortium that AFN helped with. This was a formula grant, and it could be used for telehealth, education, workforce development. It was 167 per federally recognized tribe. About a month before the closing deadline, Treasury reached out to AFN and said there's over 100 Alaska tribes who have not applied for this yet. And we thought, wow, we thought, you know, this was just going to be something that they could do on their own. But in fact, no, AFN had to come in and help because in a lot of instances, broadband was a barrier. This was a internet-only application, and many of the tribes that we helped through the portal process did not have stable broadband. I personally entered every single tribe into the database because I wanted to see how difficult it was. It was difficult. You have to upload a fingerprint, a copy of your driver's license. They do a video scan afterwards, and between all of the different pages that you navigate between, they send you a code before you can move on to the next one. So that in and of itself would have been a barrier to capturing this $10 million if it wasn't for AFN. The State Small Business Credit Initiative is a loan-to-grant program that we're very excited about. We're working with the Alaska Business Small Business Development Center on. Again, we have the largest tribal consortium in the nation. This is a $500 million tribal set-aside, of which AFN is poised to help capture about a fifth of it. There's an asterisk by this number as well at 92. This will be the floor. The ceiling we expect to tap out somewhere between 125 and 150 million after the reallocation is made later this year. And then finally, the Grid Resilience Formula Grant Program. This is administered by the Department of Energy. And as the legislation was written, included our Alaska Native regional and village corporations, but as it was being applied by the Department of Energy, cut them out and only focused on our federally recognized tribes. So AFN, through our advocacy, went back to the department and said this is illegal. Congress used the Indian Self-Determination Act of tribes. You need to find money for our Alaska Native Village corporations and regional corporations. Energy came back and said, well, we'll allocate another 10 just for the regions. We said, you're on the right track, but don't forget there's 200 village corporations, so they added another $55 million. So in all total, last year, we were able to definitively say just through our consortium applications, and this does not even include all of the other hundreds of applications that we have been tracking and encouraging and pushing to get in on their own. That's what we've been able to bring back to the state of Alaska. Next slide. The return on investment to date is another slide that I'm hoping everyone in the committee will be proud of, because we certainly are. Again, Navigator program, three phases. We're in the third phase now. The first phase with the state investment from the CARES grant was a $2.5 million grant to AFN, and we secured $210 million based on that. So that was return on investment of $84. And then in phase two, which was funded by Chugach Alaska Corporation and their CARES grant, we were able to bring in $206.2 million on a $1.7 million grant for a return on investment of $118. Some contact information. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. We have one question, one more presentation to go. I think we're going to, it's a foregone conclusion. We're going past 3 p.m. We have the opportunity, I guess, to go maybe as long as we want. But we'll try to take a few questions and move on to the last presentation. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Edgman, to the chair, to Ms. Baromeo. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say what an amazing job that you and the team at AFN have done. And let us, or far, I can't speak for anyone else, but let me know how we can help you continue your endeavors. Thank you.
Good to share. Thank you very much, Mr. Stapp.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Edgman. I was going to say something similar in that if there were four Nicole Bromeos working in the infrastructure office, we're getting all the money. So I don't know about cloning and the status of that. And it's a little late to clone her, but I hope she has done the mentoring to have her team working beside her at that same pace and skill to make us successful.
Well, and I know working with Nicole, if you ask her how you can help her, she will tell you how you can help you. So be careful when you suggest that. Co-Chair Johnson.
So I just want to add, you know, it's just outstanding. I mean, a phenomenal job. It's outstanding. It's obviously not, didn't just happen. That's a lot of work to make that happen. And I want to recognize that. I guess what I have some concern, and I want to make sure that as we move through this, if there's any way, you know, as this is implemented, that there's not a duplication of efforts between the state or even, I mean, this is, you know, in your wheelhouse, but between your tribal entities and how they have to, you know, whatever questions and planning and so on they have to do. So we kind of, I think the co-chair alluded to, you know, having another meeting and perhaps some of the conversation can be about how this, how that partnership can be with the state and as we move forward on this, because it's a very exciting opportunity, and now that's the next step to move forward on how to implement it and how to do the very best for Alaskans with the money that comes through the state, as well as, you know, how we can help with yours as well. So I just wanted to make sure that that was out there, that we want to work together as much as possible. And again, congratulations on a very difficult job and well done.
Well, very good. I think that's the segue we needed to our last presentation. Mr. Andreessen.
13 minutes. let's get you out of here on time. For the record, Nils Andreessen, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. And thanks again for this opportunity. It's been great. I mean, I am always impressed with the work that AFN and Nicole are doing, and often jealous. I want that. But it's been a really good collaborative relationship between AFN and AML, between municipalities and tribes, and between all three entities at the table. And I think this committee discussion is really emblematic of that. Similarly to AFN, AML over the last 3 years has responded to all the activities at the federal level. And from CARES Act and the $565 million that went out to local governments, to ARPA, and supporting not just their implementation, but the compliance and the full month that sucked four of my staff members' lives out of them last year to do the reporting and make sure that they are compliant with all the federal guidelines. It's just been a lot of work for all of us. And I think it speaks to the responsiveness of organizations at the table, to the governor's office, the state, AFN and AML, that we're ready to step up into these opportunities and to face these challenges. And while we've been successful over this last year and the years prior, that's not to say that the work's done or that we're at where we need to be to move into these next few years. I have a planner on staff, so they automatically went to developing a logic model for why we're doing what we're doing and how we're doing it, where we're headed. And I think it's important to know that my members a year and a half ago, my board of directors, the Alaska Conference of Mayors said, if this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, if this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, then it would make sense for us to put every effort we can into making the most of this. So I operate under a very basic, bring as many federal dollars into Alaska as possible and do whatever you need to do to make that happen. And for me, it doesn't matter if it goes to the state, to local governments, to nonprofits, to tribes. We want funding, federal funding, from this opportunity to come into Alaska because it will enrich all of us. It will displace funding requirements at the state level. It will augment budgets at the local level. It will foster collaboration between municipalities and tribes. So it's a really simple marching orders that I have to maximize the benefit from this five-year investment. And we do that by collaborating, by building up our capacity and competency. This last year has been a huge learning curve for organizations that have never done grant writing or provided technical assistance in this way. We've stood up teams. So we have more staff at AML working on infrastructure development right now than I had staff when I started at AML 3 years ago. So it speaks to the scale of how we've tried to respond. Ultimately, we want partnerships in place that make not just these grant opportunities responded to, but we want projects delivered, and we want sustainability of those projects. And I'll come back a few times throughout my presentation to the fact that we're not looking at last year, we're not looking at this year, or even 5 years. We're looking 10, 20, 20, 30 years ahead of us into how do we make sure that the infrastructure that's built up today and in 5 years lasts us for decades. We do have a lot of that collaboration in place. The Alaska Infrastructure Coordinating Committee is a made-up thing that is necessary, has been necessary this last year. We've seen collaboration between AFN and AML and the Office of the Governor, OMB, and all the different organizations who have some equity in this space who decided a year and a half ago, let's not do this all alone. But bring each other together. We meet every other week, whoever's available, to run through avoiding duplication. How do we maximize, but how do we partner on different things between Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, the Denali Commission, University of Alaska, Small Business Development Center. Of the $3 billion-plus dollars that came into Alaska last year, each of these organizations have had some fingerprint on making sure that it came in and that it's successfully deployed. So this is an informal effort that's currently the folks at the table are making sure it continues. But it's also one of the values I see of the Office of Infrastructure is keeping this group going and thinking about how to expand and bring in other perspectives to make sure that we can think beyond just this group and into others who are really benefiting or could from the opportunities in front of us. I will note that for AML, we've seen greater interagency and intergovernmental collaboration than ever before. We do have an MOA with the Alaska DOT. We have a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Health. We're talking to DEC. What we want are collaborative relationships between the state and its political subdivisions that enhance our ability to pursue these competitive opportunities. The DOT, this is the Alaska Transportation Funding Opportunity Hub that we've jointly developed. I mentioned the $1.2 billion in projects. Local projects will get fed through this hub, evaluated by AML. Local governments, tribes, nonprofits can apply to some extent to state programs that are formula funded from the IIJA. And at the other end, you'll see and everybody will see a project map for where we can encourage collaboration as projects are developed and deployed. Our role at AML in this effort is to compare those 182 applications that came in to the 38 funding opportunities at the federal level, which is a whole lot of evaluation for each of those and trying to sort through what would be most competitive. And for as much as we've built up over this last year, there's plenty of building to do to be truly successful in this 5 and 10 year period. Just in terms of scale, it's easy to think about the billions and trillion dollars in funding that's out there. But the work that goes on at AML and AFN at any of these different levels means sorting through the hundreds of NOFOs or funding opportunities that are out there, tracking the different agency, tracking the buckets of where it's kind of focused on energy or resilience, when are the open dates for funding opportunities. And this slide is really meant to show you how to think ahead, right? So it's too much generally, but if what we want to do is get ahead of this cycle. Last year was super responsive and ad hoc and informal, trying to make the most of these opportunities. We've built systems of collaboration. We're not done. The second year of IJA is all about strengthening and augmenting those collaborative efforts. And really after the second year, as every other state in the nation is also more sophisticated in their response, we want to be thinking ahead to next year. So right now we want to be thinking about what's the research necessary, where, how do we get prepared with design and planning, match needs for next year's NOFO so that we're not jumping every time a NOFO comes out. And when PIDP shows up on my Twitter feed 2 hours ago, I knew that 6 months ago, and I'm ready with the 17 projects that will be most competitive, or three, from Alaska. So this is really meant for us to start getting ahead of the curve and thinking about how to be responsive. I will say that there's blue and yellow on the far left of the slide, and those are grant opportunities that AML has responded to directly. AML applied or supported applications from either the state or local governments. There's a lot to do. It's not just responding to grant opportunities and playing whack-a-mole with NOFOs. It is thinking about being strategic in the deployment of these funds, that it's not just when the grant award comes up and then you've got to figure out where your match is going to come from for the commitment that you made. Then you have to think about procurement and workforce, and we know there are supply chain issues. We know that the bids that we got 3 years ago are 150% higher now when we go to purchase the goods for and services for those grants. We've got to think about project management and then grant reporting and outcomes. All of that's coming in this year and in year three in ways that we didn't experience in that first year. And that will be, you know, additional level of scaling up that, you know, the three at this table and others will have to be thinking about. And then we also want to plant the seeds now for how are you going to maintain and operate this infrastructure in the years to come? What's the asset management that's going to be necessary that local governments and the state and tribes are going to have to be putting in place new systems to make sure that these that this infrastructure is sustainable. The scale of the infrastructure package is massive. It's overwhelming. But I, for as much as I enjoy spending my Saturdays and Sundays writing grants for different folks, I would really also like not to be in that position. And I don't know how much of our lives we've given up to making the most of this opportunity, but the scale is immense, and I think that's why you'll see requests for funding. You'll see an interest in strengthening the partnership that has developed. And a respond, and if we just responded to requests for information from Department of Energy, it would take up weeks of our lives. So there's a huge amount of investment, I think, necessary in the partnerships that have developed to continue to make the most of this. And none of these challenges will go away in this next year, but I think it's really important for this committee, for the legislature, to be thinking about how together, what are the kinds of investments that we can make to meet these challenges? What's the level of intergovernmental collaboration that the Office of Infrastructure can offer? How do we come together around procurement planning or shared services? What's the level of match needed? And I will say there's good legislation from the state of Colorado who implemented a match fund for political subdivisions, tribes, and others to access, to be able to reduce the burden and barrier to replying to federal grant opportunities. So it's an allocation of funds that if we don't make today, when I think about this once-in-a-generation opportunity, we will wait until the next generation before that opportunity is ahead of us. So we have to respond, I think, at the state level, at the local level, to be able to make the most of it. So there's a lot of urgency, I think, to having that in place probably this year out of that five-year cycle. There's a lot more that we could be doing. The strategic planning that goes into this, the regional planning, There are pieces in place for that. When you hear from, you know, Alaska DOT about regional planning organizations, maybe that's a step in the right direction. But there's a lot of work that between us we'll have to do. We will host what's become an annual infrastructure symposium sometime this year, building off of those that were hosted, co-hosted by AFN and AML last year. But we want to keep this in front of people. We want to make sure that local and tribal governments have opportunities to engage at the state and federal level and get questions answered. Finally, in terms of your role, the state's role, I think we want to continue to make the most of responding to competitive grant opportunities. Formula grants on their own are a lot, but if we're really going to make the most of this, we want to compete. And it takes skill and competency, sophistication to really be competitive. If this first year we got lucky, and I would say I responded in the last 8 months, AML responded to, I think we submitted $1.4 billion in projects. We've heard back, $300, $400 million in successful applications over that time. I won't say that we got lucky, but thank goodness for our congressional delegation and advocacy. They got behind all of those projects and made sure that Alaska benefited. But we'll have to get more sophisticated in the years to come. We will have to get more coordinated about procurement, collaboration, workforce issues, so that as these funds are deployed, we can find efficiencies in that deployment. We have to better understand what's going on at the local and regional level and have systems in place at the agency level, at the state level, to respond and advance those priorities. And finally, again, making sure that we've got sustainability in mind, that we're not just building right now, but that we're putting in place systems that will sustain us for the long term. Thank you.
1 minute over.
Hi,
Mr. Andreessen. Thank you for that presentation. It is 3:01. I was just reminded that we have the committee room till 3:30, so we do have additional time, and I see a lot of eager faces around the table. I want to start off with a question as we kind of bring all of this to a conclusion, and that's to bring things back to, you mentioned the congressional delegation and the work at the ground level by Senator Murkowski. I can't really stress that enough, but when you look at the bill and the amount of investments that are in it, and I would recommend to anyone around the table to get this handbook from the White House that was issued about a year ago or so, and I'm happy to hand it around if people want to take a closer look at it. But in that, there's a lot of investments in energy and climate resiliency and high cost of living in rural Alaska, the development of clean and renewable energy, things like energy storage, and grid modernization, and things of that sort of area of need in Alaska. I just wanted to give all three of you or whomever wants to address just the opportunity to sort of talk to those issues and, kind of addressing those provisions that might be in the Infrastructure Act relative to your work as navigators or, Mr. Anderson, to your work at the governor's office, but kind of opened that up as just a broad question.
Yeah, maybe I'll take a first stab at it. Through the chair. Representative Edgman. I think there's a couple things to note. One, that federal-state interface. We probably need to do more on that front. I don't think we can just send a call to D.C. every time a federal agency issue comes up. Though she's been very successful. When we think about the provisions in the bill, each of those provisions is up to agency interpretation. Implementation of Justice 40 and thinking about disadvantaged and underserved communities is up to agency interpretation. So for each of the different funding agencies, they have their own criteria and processes for determining what metrics are being used for how to think about Alaska communities. They're not consistent. The data's poor. And often, I would say, they're failing Alaska. So that would be a state congressional delegation, probably work to do on that front. I think, for the other I should also note, I mean, we're not done. The Inflation Reduction Act, we haven't mentioned a huge amount of money going into air quality, climate resilience, carbon reduction, et cetera. I don't think we have to be afraid of some of those terms because, I mean, you look at the NOFOs and they're talking about improving HVAC systems. So really, I mean, for pollution reduction and climate resilience, like when you get into actually what they're looking for, it's just some of the basics that we want in all of our communities. It's reducing or improving safety. It's increasing energy efficiency, which should reduce costs for energy. A lot of really meaningful work that could get done if we could figure out how to access it. I mean, I think the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program is a good example of where you just want to smack your head against the wall. So 400 tribal entities eligible for these block grants, $10,000 apiece. It takes more work to apply for and comply with those grants than it's worth it. But we're talking about, do we leave $4.3 million on the table or not? So thinking about how to work through those issues is really important. The biggest challenge in all of that is, do you have the data? Do you have state agencies organized around supporting tribal and local applications and response? And you have projects, actually, that you could advance for each of the competitive opportunities. So that's my quick stab at that.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. Thank you all so much for all of your work. I'm very, very grateful for this report. And I just had a couple of thoughts. I had two notes, sticky notes here, Chair, that are more global and I think may help me to understand more how you're sorting through the enormous opportunity that we have. I wondered if we could hear perhaps from a couple of you or all of you or whomever would like to speak to this, but certainly from Ms. Borromeo about how we're making sure that we're meeting the needs of Alaskans, how you're determining that. I'm sure that you have a triage somehow in your decision making of all these opportunities. Clearly, you've chosen connectivity. And not only have you shared with us how much you're bringing in terms of dollars, but how many Alaskans are now connected because of that. So you must have had your eye on a certain set of values that you hope to come to fruition. And through that, you chose specific things. And I would imagine water and sewer would be high on the list for those. I think we only have 40 or so communities still struggling with the very basics of water, sewer, housing. I haven't heard a lot about housing, but, and then, of course, the other question I had, if you will, Chair, is as you have worked through this triage of determining which ones to go for which projects, how much consideration was put to workforce and whether or not we really have what it takes to accomplish these projects down the line?
Through the Chair, Representative Galvin. In brief, the federal agencies have really chosen what opportunities we're going to apply for. Okay. And by that I mean as the legislation is passed and programs are stood up by the agencies, they don't all move at the same pace. So Nils mentioned earlier that he's, you know, jealous of the things that we've been able to do. And in the next coming years, I'm going to be cheering him on for the things that he's able to do because they're moving at different paces. Mm. And the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program through NTIA was just the first big billion-dollar program, and it happened to be a tribal program. So that's where we were focused. And then they were ready next with the Digital Equity Planning Grant, and that's where we had to focus. The water and sewer programs have not come online yet. We expect in this fiscal year, energy and transportation will be two really big departments that start to move. And in that sense, NILS and the local governments may be better positioned than tribal governments to capture those resources. But to the extent that we can collaborate and make sure that the strongest applicant is at the table, that's what we do.
I just want to say thank you, and that also helps me to, it clarifies how important it is to have a central body helping to put all of this together and all of your partnership together. Thank you.
Absolutely. And through the chair, if we may follow up. Representative Galvin, that central body is really Nils. He has been instrumental in bringing all of us on his slide together for regular updates. And so we all have different strengths and weaknesses. Nils, one of his many strengths is pulling people together, keeping everyone informed, not making this a competitive race of who can do the best, the fastest. And the state also deserves a lot of credit, too, by making sure that the tribal governments, Native corporations, and tribal organizations are positioned to compete for competitive funds and that are in the room when these decisions are being made.
And I think our final question of the presentation might be Representative Kronk, just to kind of set the stage for.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. I just wanted to thank you guys. Thank you for what you're doing. Working together for the benefit of all of Alaska is something we should all be working for, and our state can't do it alone by itself, so thank you. There's some days where I really want to thank Ms. Borromeo for creating this large district that I serve now, and there's other days where I'm like, oh, I'm not so thankful. We got to travel. It's an impossible task, but we'll get there. But we got to travel around, and some of the highlights are obviously the fish on the Yukon. Cheap energy is, you know, and we have some of the same issues all across, but broadband was a big issue. And so I'm going to look at the energy things here. So what can we do to help you? Because being in the Eastern Interior, I'm on the road system, and we know we have the rail belt energy system. How do we get the funding to upgrade the rail belt, continue the road belt, tie it all together, and benefit all of Alaska? Because I know once that electric rate drops, it also is going to change the PC rate. So all of rural Alaska will benefit from those projects like that. So how do I help you obtain those? And we know we just had an electrical meeting here last week, and every entity, didn't matter if it was from Cordova or Dillingham, they were all on board with this. And so how do we help you? How do we work together to garner those funds to do this? So, I mean, because people talk about affordable energy, and we live in rural Alaska, affordable energy is still not affordable. Cheap energy is where we need to get to. So how do we do that? So,
yeah, through the chair, Representative Kronk, I think specific to energy, and I do want to come back to workforce, but for energy, there's not as many answers from Department of Energy as you would like to meet the needs of, you know, Alaska. I will say that Alaska Energy Authority is kind of the prime respondent to some of those opportunities, grid resilience. They, I think, submitted a letter of interest or concept paper for grid resilience, both for the rail belt and for rural, two separate applications. We were part of, I think, one of those. But that will be the avenue for a large portion of it, even as, you know, there are tribal set-asides, which will make some incremental difference. And I think we have to figure out how to mesh those efforts and make sure that the whole state has their needs addressed. But, I mean, a lot of what Department of Energy is distributing is research grants, it's kind of higher-level new technologies. It's not like patch holes and fixed generators. You know, it's not the kind of the meat that maybe some communities might be looking to. I mean, I think it's an important point, too, for this committee. The IJA is not solving all of our infrastructure needs. I know 3 years ago, the reason that brought us to this table was a $30 billion infrastructure deficit. We talked about housing and school construction. Those aren't in this bill, right? So those needs aren't going to be addressed by IJA. Water and sewer was on that list, and hopefully we see unserved communities' needs met. So there are, I mean, for as much good as this bill does, it doesn't address everything. For as much as you'd like to do with energy, it's not going to address most of it. But I think you do have a good partner in AEA, and there, I mean, each agency is scaling up and responding in ways that they've never had to before. I mean, we didn't have to compete for transportation dollars before. It was formula funds. So, I mean, each agency is really responding in different ways. AHFC is going to take more of a role for some of these things, including for energy, and we'll have to be supportive of agency operations. And then if I may, Chair, respond to Representative Galvin about workforce.
Mr. Andreessen.
The other gap in IJA, there's no funding in IJA for workforce development, or very little. There's nothing to plug the hole. I know a presentation last year said that we're short 16,000 workers to do most of what we need to do for the infrastructure investment. Those gaps remain. I've seen the vacancy numbers in municipalities and elsewhere. But I do think there is new funding coming through the Inflation Reduction Act. There are specific opportunities that we've flagged for the University of Alaska and for others for workforce and Denali Commission and others are really thinking about how to leverage that. So I think that's probably something to be thinking about. And then we also have to keep in mind 5-year, 10-year process. We may not have the workers right now. Right now, we're just applying for grants. It doesn't take a workforce except lots of grant writers. We have to be thinking about next year when we need people on the ground and the year after that. I think ANTHC, for instance, for water and sewer projects needs 70 people a year to deploy those funds. So we have to be thinking about who do we need next year and what are the programs we can put in place to get us there.
I think it's also fair to say that, in the context of the Infrastructure Act, there was a lot of the money that was appropriated. A lot of it was authorized, but there was a lot of, outside of the formula-driven programs, there was also programs that have yet to be conceived, right? I mean, so we sort of know the universe that's out there in terms of the buckets, as you pointed out earlier, but there's going to be future opportunities that maybe we aren't aware of today. And it's also interesting to note that in the Infrastructure Act, there's no money for deferred maintenance, outside of operating money for the ferry system a little bit. The Infrastructure Act doesn't include that, and maybe the Inflation Act is something that we as a committee want to, have a briefing on later on. But I'd like to, on behalf of the committee, thank all three of you for making your time available. Mr. Andreessen with the Municipal League, thank you for being here. Mr. Andreessen, and your new role as the coordinator for the Governor's Infrastructure Office, thank you. Ms. Romeo and Nicole, thanks for flying down from Anchorage today to be here, just to be at this hearing. Really appreciate that. And seeing no additional business before the committee and before we close, just to point out that our next meeting is tomorrow, same time, same place. We will be receiving a presentation on the Order of Operations, Alaska's oil tax regime. That will involve Dan Stickle, the chief economist, and Colleen Glover, both with the Department of Revenue. And with that, at approximately 3:17 p.m., we are adjourned.